Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Misha Tate, and you're listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Justin Ray, and you're listening to Carson's Corner. Make sure you stay tuned in.
This is Justin Ray Harvey, Frank Duke's student. You're listening to the best of the best shows on the web and beyond. Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
This is Bo, the one-man army Taylor, media darling and Midwest champion of the world. You're listening to the only radio show that's hard-hitting, keeps it real, and does not pull punches. Carson's Corner.
This is the coach, Sean Tompkins, and you're listening to the best in mixed martial arts, Carson's Corner.
Okay, let's go. Yeah, g'day, this is Justin Lawrence calling from my backyard in Australia, mate. You're listening to Bob Carson, the finest investigative journalist in mixed martial arts history. Listen to his show, I love it.
Hey, this is Joey Odessa, and you're listening to me on the Bob Carson Show, the show that lets no words barred give a whole new perspective to no holds barred.
These days, it's not much fun at Bally's and Caesars in Atlantic City. The CEO is playing the corporate greed game, cutting dealers' hours, cutting retirement and health benefits, even breaking the law by refusing to bargain. Yet he paid himself $39 million last year, with plenty of perks.
Place your bet.
When Bally's and Caesars play games with casino dealers, it's not fun for anybody. And everybody loses. That's why the UAW Atlantic City Dealers Union paid for this time.
Once again, this is Carson's Corner, and my name is Bob Carson. It is midnight here on the East Coast, July 18th, 2018, and we are 4 days removed from the Catch Wrestling World Championship, which took place at the Primal Gym in Hamilton, New Jersey. I told you I was going to attend this event for my friend Curran Jacobs. I got to tell you, I filmed the event. I'm really going to go into detail about this. But I filmed the event, and I become an even bigger fan of catch wrestling now. I would venture to say that I'm actually committed to covering this sport now. It's more exciting than jiu-jitsu. I had a great experience. I'm going to talk all about what happened on Saturday. I'm going to give you sort of a behind-the-scenes, you know, if you weren't there, you don't know what happened. But I'm going to give you my take on the Catch Wrestling event, Frank Gotch 2018 Catch Wrestling event that took place that crowned a new champion. Of course, his name is Curran Jacobs, the absolute best catch wrestler on the planet. There's no question about that. There is nobody that can beat Curran Jacobs. I'm sorry, there just isn't. You know, you could have some of these high-level grapplers like a Burnout, like John Jones, who's grappling now because he's suspended. He's facing a lengthy suspension from USADA. He's talking about grappling and Chael's event. It's just not as exciting as catch wrestling. It really isn't. So we're going to get into that in just a few moments here. If you want to be a part of the program, you can just give me a call at 347-326-9749. That is 347-326-9749. We have the Facebook chat room or the Facebook live stream going if you want to chime in on there. We also are broadcasting to you live via Blog Talk Radio. So you can give me a call. You can listen to us on either platform. I got to tell you, I was supposed to go to this press conference today. DAZN, the digital streaming company, signed a partnership with Bellator. We know this. This happened last month. Supposed to start in 2019. It supposedly is going to be a 10-figure deal. similar to what the UFC did in with ESPN Plus. And I was supposed to go. They had Eddie Hearn there. They had Anthony Joshua and Alexander Povetkin, who's going to be Joshua's next opponent. You also had Scott Coker there, president of Bellator. And I'm not sure, but I think there were supposed to be some Bellator fighters. So I was all set to go. I spoke to the great one, Eddie Goldman, last night, and he was tired. He was I caught him just before going to bed, but he gave me directions. And I'm like, okay, great, I'll see it, because I had off today. It would have been great. I wanted to go up there, maybe get some audio. I was supposed to get some audio from some of these people. The PR people behind DAZN were great. They reached out to me, very, very nice, unlike some other PR people that I've dealt with in the past. And I was really looking forward to it. At about 6 o'clock this morning, I get an alert from my bank that says that I have only $7 left in my bank account. So, to go to New York City, it's a lot of money. It's, if you want to take the train, which I was going to take, it's like $16 one way. So it's $32 round trip. Then you got to take a cab there or take a bus to where this was, because this was, I think, on 14th Street, which is not close to Penn Station. So it would have been a real hike for me, and I couldn't do it. It's like I have no money. As I'm broadcasting to you now, I literally have zero money, and I get paid on friggin' Saturday. So I don't know how I'm going to survive. I'm going to have to do something, because I'm used to consuming so many friggin' calories that my body can't have it, it's a problem. I have nothing to drink. I'm like a refugee here. This is ridiculous. And it's not my fault, ladies and gentlemen. It's the system's fault. But, so I couldn't go. I was really disappointed. I texted Eddie, and he understood. Maybe I'll go to the next press conference see what they'll probably put me on their press list, and they'll send me some updates, and then we'll kind of go from there. So very, very disappointed about that. But what can you do, folks? Such is life. You just got to keep on keeping on. All right, so on July 14th, this past Saturday, we had the 2018 Catch Wrestling World Championship event. This was put on by Snake Pit USA Catch Wrestling Association. To my knowledge, they didn't put out a press release for this event. They didn't really reach out to the media. The only reason why I was aware of this is because Eddie Goldman follows Catch Wrestling, but I don't think Eddie Goldman works with Snake Pit anymore. There just seems to be a real divide in the world of catch wrestling, because you have this organization, Snake Pit USA, and you also have the Catch Wrestling Alliance, and you've also had this long-standing feud, as we pointed out on last show, between Josh Barnett and Curran Jacobs. Curran Jacobs has challenged Josh to a catch wrestling match. They went back and forth for a while, for probably about 2 or 3 years online, and it just never materialized. So Curran was going to go to this wrestling match. He flew in from Michigan, and he wasn't sure if they were going to film his matches. So Eddie reached out to me and said, listen, Curran's looking to get somebody to videotape his matches because we don't know what's going on. And I said, let me reach out to Curran and I'll make sure that I'm down there and I can record his matches so we could put them online. I reached out and Curran's like, yep, absolutely. He wanted somebody to record his matches. And sure enough, that's what led me to this event. Now, I got to tell you, Hamilton, New Jersey is not that far from me. It's maybe about 45 minutes. I went to school in Mercer County College, which is close to Hamilton, and I'm somewhat familiar with the area. So it really wasn't that big of a hike for me. So I go down there, and it was a big gym, big facility, much bigger than where they had the Liberty Bell catch wrestling tournament, which I covered a couple years ago with Eddie Goldman. That was in, I forget which town that was in, but I think it was in Plainsboro or something, not too far from where Hamilton was. And, you know, as soon as I got in there, they asked if I was media. I said, absolutely. So they escorted me in there to see Joel Bain. Now, there was some confusion because they had thought that Curran had a guy that was streaming their his matches. He had one person streaming his matches via videotape and or via Facebook live stream. And I said, no, he's supposed to have me. And they're like, no, he's only supposed to have somebody streaming Facebook Live. And so we got Curran. I said, Curran should have contacted you. What she did, and ultimately Joel spoke to Curran, and it was all good. They said, you know, I could film Curran's matches, only Curran's matches, which is fine. You know, just, you know, go wherever you can. And that's it. I didn't want to go up to where the ring was because they had their photographer there that was on the ring and was on the apron. And I just wanted to record from wherever I could get a good vantage point of the action. It was a very, very nice facility. They had a sort of a concession stand there. They had, seating. I wasn't sure what was going to happen. I wasn't sure if this was going to take place in a ring. I wasn't sure if this was going to take place on wrestling mats. I didn't know what to expect. And so you had people there, maybe 100 people, if not a little less than that. And so it was good. You know, you got a good vantage point of the action where, no matter where you were at the arena or at the gym. And so they called all the fighters out there, and they had the national anthem. And it was really, really good. I got to see these guys kind of walk right past me and get into the ring and do the national anthem. And then on to the first match, which was, if my recollection is correct, was Kenny Lester versus Nick Kajiya. Now, Nick Kajiya has been doing grappling, wrestling, you know, probably for 20-plus years. I remember years ago, I wrestled him at the Bayside Academy of Martial Arts, and he was training back then when I was training, and that was 99, 2000. He's around the same age as I am. And, you know, needless to say, I lost to him. He was just very unpleasant to wrestle. Just like, you know, he's 350, 360 pounds. He's about 6'3", 6'4", and he's just difficult to move. And I don't know how to wrestle either. I can grapple, but I don't know how to wrestle. I have no wrestling ability. Once the fight hits the ground, I know a little bit here and there. But so I knew who Nick Kajiya was. Plus, Nick actually has done the Eddie Goldman show. And so he's well known to the people on the East Coast. Very nice guy, very friendly guy. And Kenny Lester, I knew about, but I mistaked him for Kenny Lister, I believe his name is, that actually helps out with some of the training at Jackson Winks, Jackson Wink MMA Academy, which John Jones and Holly Holm and Michelle Waterson train at Albuquerque, New Mexico. And I thought this was the same guy, and apparently it's not the same guy. This guy, Kenny Lester, wrestled for Arizona State. He's from Florida, and, you know, a big guy. And he won. He won the opening match against Nick Kajiya. I think it was a pin. It was a long match. You know, forget how many rounds it went. So that was it. You had him winning the first match, and then that was it. Now, the second match, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I don't know if it was Eric Hammer versus Pat Stano, but Eric Hammer replaced Josh Barnett because we all know what happened with Josh Barnett. He pulled out of this tournament, you know, 3 or 4 days before, and he was replaced by his student, Eric Hammer. and he fought Pat Stano. Now, I don't know. I don't remember if this is the second or third match. Brandon Ruiz may have had the first match. Brandon Ruiz fought that guy from Philadelphia. I forget his name. John something. And Brandon won relatively quickly. I forgot. I think it was a pin, or I don't remember what the result is. I don't have anything in front of me. But the third match was Eric Hammer versus Pat Stano. Now, Pat Stano has been around for a long time. I couldn't believe that he was, around still. I mean, I remember this guy, he fought Dan Severn years ago. I mean, this is like 2004, 2005 here in New Jersey. I mean, he's got to be close to 50 years old, Pat. You know, he's definitely up there. And so this guy, Eric Hammer, is a real, real strong, explosive guy. I think he has a background in professional wrestling. He's a real, real big, strong guy, about 6'4", maybe 6'5", very low percentage of body fat, and he's very good in the top position when his opponent is turtled down, you know, when his opponent is on all four. And so, you know, he roughed up Stano, and that's Eric's style. He's a very, very rough and brutal wrestler. You know, he's the type of guy that you watch him wrestle and you actually get bruised just by watching him wrestle people and whatnot. And so Stano couldn't continue. I don't know if it was an injury, but the match was cut short. Then you had, in the fourth match, it was our good buddy Curran Jacobs, who's listening now. Congratulations, my friend. I talk a lot about Curran and his performance and what it all means and whatnot. And he was fighting Johnny Buck. And you know, these are two guys. I guess they had some sort of feud because Curran was on record as saying that, you know, Johnny Buck talked a lot of trash and he was going to look forward to beating Johnny and whatnot. And they were the fourth match. You didn't really get the sense that there was animosity between the two of them. They both showed, you know, good sportsmanship. And Curran was just faster than Johnny Buck. Curran was way more explosive than Johnny Buck, who was a decent college wrestler, as I understand, in his own right. You know, has many, many MMA fights, and not taking away anything from Johnny Buck, but you could just tell that, you know, Curran was just more explosive, was more crisper and more faster, probably had better endurance. I mean, definitely had better endurance than any of the guys that competed last night or at the tournament, and was able to beat Johnny via rear naked choke, I think in like the fifth or sixth round. It was a real, real long match. And so, you know, he wrestled, and then that was it. That match was over. And then the second semifinal match, or the first semifinal match, was Brandon Ruiz versus Kenny Lester. Okay? And Brandon Ruiz pins Kenny Lester. I believe it was a pin. Yeah, I mean, I'm just going by recollection here. I haven't seen the results posted anywhere. And it was a relatively quick match, okay? Then in the other semifinal match, you had, after this match, Curran was, you know, on the side and he was recuperating. And then you had Eric Hammer and Curran Jacobs compete in the semifinal round. And Curran did not get a lot of rest in between his matches. I mean, he was, you know, like I said, Brandon Ruiz finished Kenny Lester pretty quickly. I think maybe the first or second round. And then from there it was Curran versus Eric Hammer. And I was saying to myself, I said, this is going to be a really tough match for Curran, because this guy Hammer is, he's an animal. He was fresh. You could see he was really, really pumped up, and he had a lot of time to recuperate. Where Curran is like, you know, Curran just wrestled this marathon against Johnny Buck, and so I'm like, all right, well, we're gonna see what happens. And you know, they both get into the ring, and it was a real, real intense match, very physical. Eric landed some throws. Eric probably outweighed Curran by, you know, 60 or 70 pounds. I mean, it's important to note that, you know, Curran was by far the smallest competitor in this tournament. You know, Curran was probably, you know, maybe 210, 215, if that. I don't know his exact weight, but he was by no means the biggest competitor out there. He was clearly the smallest competitor out there. And so these guys for, you know, 3 or 4 rounds were just really, really going at it. There was at one point that it looked very close that Eric was going to land the bulldog choke, but Curran was able, amazingly, miraculously. Curran's like a magician out there. He can get out of virtually any submission, and his scrambling ability is just unbelievable. And so it was the first round where, you know, these guys were going at it, and Curran actually had a Kimura, or a double wrist lock, and it was right at the edge of the ring, and Eric Hammer ended up falling out of the ring. It looked like Curran pushed him. They were going at each other, and Eric got pissed, and he started pushing Curran, and then they broke it up. And then as fast as that happened, Eric, you know, he calmed down, and both these guys went forward with the match as if nothing happened. And it was a real back-and-forth match, and then all of a sudden, Curran gets him down, or takes his back, and gets the rear naked choke. Now, it was at that moment that I realized that this kid, Curran Jacobs, is unbeatable in catch wrestling. There's nobody that's going to be able to beat him. It's like, you know, it's like watching Babe Ruth. It's like watching the best ever at a sport do something. It's really like remarkable, you know. So Curran won. He finished all of his fights via rear naked choke. They shook hands, displayed good sportsmanship after the match, and then it was on to the final against Brandon Ruiz. Now, at that point, I knew that Curran was definitely going to win. I mean, Curran was, you know, going to be the favorite to win all of these matches, you know, maybe with the exception of, you know, if you had to place odds on the fight, on the tournament, you know, you would probably pick Ruiz because of his grappling accomplishments. But you know, this is like a different ball game here with Curran Jacobs. And so I knew that Curran was going to win. And sure enough, you know, 5th or 6th round, I forget what it was, he lands the rear naked choke against Brandon Ruiz. And that was it. It was such an emotional moment. It was so, I got to tell you, it was so captivating. And it was just so amazing to see Curran just run through these guys at his size and, you know, open my eyes to this great sport of catch wrestling that, as I said earlier, is more entertaining than jiu-jitsu. It really is. You know, because you have the pin aspect to it, because, you know, you have essentially, you know, not rope escapes, but, I mean, you know, just a different strategy, a way to fend off submissions. It makes it so much more exciting, I think, out there for the viewers, you know. And, you know, you could have any of these MMA guys cross over into catch wrestling. Curran will find a way to beat every one of them. And that's what's so amazing, is that he finds a way to win. He finds a way to, you know, keep on going and to beat guys that are much bigger than him. It's like the, you know, the Rocky Balboa story. Although, you know, Curran has tremendous wrestling ability, and incorporates that into this new sport, not new sport, but this alternative sport in catch wrestling. And as I said, you know, you got to be a fan of Curran Jacobs. He's a very, very, very nice guy, very, very gracious, very respectful. And I got to tell you, when after he beat Johnny Buck, he went over to Josh Barnett and shook his hand. And Josh shook his hand, but Josh didn't look like he, you know, wanted Curran there to be shaking his hand. Yeah, Josh looked pissed because Curran beat, you know, a few of his students, you know. But at the end of the day, you know, when Curran won and then he took a picture with Josh Barnett, you would hope that they were able to bury the hatchet. And as Curran said in his post-fight speech, you know, it's time to be friends, and it's time essentially to, you know, make the sport better, okay, and cooperate, okay, you know, not be at each other's throats with the different catch wrestling groups and whatnot. Will that materialize? I don't know. You know, will we have co-promoted, you know, catch wrestling events? I don't know. But what I do know is that this is an amazing sport that has an amazing champion in catch wrestling, in Curran Jacobs, that is only going to go up from here. And I got to tell you, and I don't mean any disrespect to Josh Barnett, but I don't know how in the world Josh Barnett thinks that he could beat Curran Jacobs. I mean, you know, if I'm Josh Barnett, and Josh Barnett is no longer with the UFC. I believe he's in litigation now with USADA. You know, he's talking about traveling the world and you know, competing in different organizations, and that would be absolutely great. I mean, he by no means is done as an MMA fighter. He certainly is Hall of Fame worthy. This is a guy who was a former UFC champion. I mean, you know, on and on and on. And he's a great grappler too. There's no question about that. But he's not a catch wrestler. I mean, that's just, you know, I would say there's almost no conceivable way that he would be able to beat Curran Jacobs. I'm sorry, I don't see anybody being able to beat this kid, not at this sport. You know, MMA is different. I think Curran's got the right approach in MMA. I think he's not necessarily diving headfirst in MMA, sort of dipping his toe and seeing, you know, the opportunities that are out there. But if I was Curran Jacobs, and, you know, you could take this for what it's worth. I mean, I've been around sport for a long time. I wouldn't even go into MMA. There's no reason to go into MMA. And, you know, look what's happening to these fighters like Max Holloway and others that are taking head injury, and there's little payoff to be an MMA fighter. It's just, it wouldn't be worth it. I would stick with catch wrestling and you know, competing and doing seminars as he's doing and continuing with his acting and everything like that. It seems like he's got a good head on his shoulders and he's going to continue to do what he's doing, but I would stay away from MMA. You know, I don't think it would be worth it, but, you know, that's just me. I was really, really super impressed with Curran, and you know, he's beaten some serious, serious guys. I mean, Brandon Ruiz has been around a long time. You know, he's no spring chicken, Brandon Ruiz, but he's got a lot of experience and a lot of titles. You know, and you got a guy like Eric Hammer, as I mentioned, is just an absolute animal. Very, very good wrestler in his own right. And these guys are all collegiate-level wrestlers. And then, of course, him beating Travis View, that's online. If you want to go on YouTube, you can watch that. You know, there's nobody out there that's going to beat Curran Jacobs. And he's somebody that you got to root for. You know, he's got that Irish spirit. You know, he's got a lot going for him. And so congratulations to Curran Jacobs for his catch wrestling World Championship. It was well earned. This is a guy who wrestled. God, it was just exhausting watching him. But this is his sport. Make no mistake about it. And you got people out there that have, you know, documentary companies and are interested in putting together documentaries. Well, this is a kid to do a documentary on. This is a sport to do a documentary on, because it's still in its infancy stages. And it will continue to grow, in my opinion. It has to. It's a lot more entertaining than jiu-jitsu. That's just my opinion. I can't watch a jiu-jitsu match. You know, I really can't. Looks like our Facebook live stream ended. I think it's probably just a space issue or something with my computer. But we are still live here on Blog Talk Radio, and we got about a half hour left. So let's talk about UFC in Boise, Idaho. I don't know why the UFC would go to a place like Idaho, which is really kind of a depressing state. I'm sorry, folks. I mean, it's not your metropolitan area. It's not your, you know, New York City or Nashville or fill in the blank. It's Boise, for crying out loud. How many people do they have in Idaho? What is it? Boise, Idaho. Not a lot, I would bet. But nonetheless, I didn't get a chance to see this card because I was working. I work two jobs now, folks. I work about 70 hours a week, which is offensive. But that's what you got to do in this godforsaken system. And I'm a concierge. My full-time job is I'm a multi-unit manager. I manage a few different facilities in loss prevention. And I just started this concierge job where I'm basically a concierge in this very wealthy condominium complex. And I work the overnights, and I do it a couple nights a week. It's very tiring. And I started my job right after the Curran Jacobs championship win in this Saturday. So I couldn't watch UFC Boise. However, I did look at some of the online highlights, and I want to talk a little bit about some of the results there. You had in the main event Junior Dos Santos beating Blagoy Ivanov. Ivanov came from Professional Fighters League, and he was really one of the only guys, the only real talents that they had there at PFL, in my opinion, maybe besides Kayla Harrison. And he comes over, and from what I could tell, Junior Dos Santos won, but he's not the same Junior Dos Santos as he was, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, even earlier than that. He won a decision. He could have put Ivanov away, wasn't able to do so, took some shots, and beat a UFC newcomer. Okay, where he was probably favored to win this fight. Anyway, so, that was a big thing. You know, anytime a fighter from that region of the world debuts in the UFC, I look forward to it because I think that's, you know, these Eastern European fighters, they're going to be the future of the heavyweight division. You've got a lot of these guys out there. You got Vitaly Minnikov. You got Alexander Volkov, who I think is really, really going to be a championship caliber fighter in the future. You've got Ivanov. You've got other fighters that are coming over and, you know, are going to really, really make an impact in a very old heavyweight division in the UFC. Then you also had in the co-main event, was it Zach Otto versus Sage Northcutt? Now, they're feeding Sage Northcutt these fights to build them up and to, you know, make himself look impressive. Not saying he hasn't improved since he went over to Team Alpha Male, but I mean, let's be honest. At this point, you know, Sage Northcutt is not going to be fighting for a championship. Now, he's still very young. He's, what, only 21, 22 years old. and anything's possible, but if he fights a top 10 fighter in his division, he's going to lose. There's just no question about that. He doesn't have the skill set to beat a Tyron Woodley, to beat a Colby Covington, to beat a Damian Maia, to beat a Mike Perry, you know, who's not in the top 10, but, you know, is certainly a higher caliber fighter, to Sage Northcutt. And so he beat Zach Otto. As I understand it, he was hurt early in that fight, and he came back and he won. He's not fighting emotionally anymore. He's not giving up in, you know, the first round or so, and he's improved his mental toughness. Okay, that's great. But I don't know what they're planning to do with Sage, if they're going to continue to give him these, you know, softer fights and just, you know, hope that more and more people tune in to see him fight. You also had Rick Len versus Dennis Bermudez. I didn't really care about that fight. Chad Mendes beating Miles Jury. Now, I got a little bit of a personal bias against Miles Jury. I contacted him for an interview a couple of years ago, and his manager was a total jerk to me, started name-calling me. And I hope for Miles' sake that he's no longer with this person. I hope that he's under new management, because this guy was just such a clown that he was almost insecure that people were going to take Miles away from him. And I can't see him being able to do any good for Miles. And I hope that he's under new management. So I kind of was rooting against Miles Jury. And I didn't see the fight, but from what I understand, Mendes landed a good shot and then swarmed on Miles Jury. But Miles Jury had his hands up and was blocking the punches, but wasn't intelligently defending himself. And so, therefore, the referee stopped the fight. Good stoppage. Of course, Mendes coming off of the USADA suspension. And who knows what's going to happen to him at that division, at the bantamweight division. Now, maybe he'll fight a couple more times. He wants to fight somebody in the top five, and maybe he will. I don't know. But it was a good return to the UFC for Chad Mendes, and we'll see where he goes from here. You also had the women's fight, which I was interested in. I am interested in women's MMA. You had Kat Zingano versus Marion Renault, and Kat Zingano got the victory just via takedown. From my understanding, she didn't display any striking skills. She kind of looked sloppy in some of her takedowns, but she was able to take her down, Renault. And that was how the fight ended. It was just a decision. And, you know, she goes on from here. I posted on Twitter that she's ridiculous for calling out Amanda Nunes. I mean, come on. I mean, that's just absurd. But that's what Kat is. I mean, I think Kat is stuck in the past. You know, she thinks that she's still the same person she was in 2013, you know, when she beat Amanda. It's a completely different game, and you know, I don't think that Kat is going to be able to beat top five fighters in her division. I really don't. So we'll have to see what happens there. And that was really all the fights that I was interested in. You know, I didn't get a chance to see the card, like I said, but, you know, the UFC is putting on more of these cards, and I don't know if they're going to garner the viewership that they want to. By the way, UFC 226 got somewhere in the neighborhood of about 400,000 pay-per-view buys, which by today's standards is good. You know, that's considered a good number there. And I don't know what to say about that. I did see the pay-per-view. I was able to see the event, and I was surprised by Daniel being able to beat Stipe. I picked Stipe to win, as you'll recall, and he wasn't able to do so. Daniel knocked him out, and that's it. Now he's fighting Brock Lesnar, which is a total disgrace. Lesnar you know, under USADA suspension. I don't even know if he's entered the USADA pool yet. He should enter the USADA pool and fight. It's probably not going to happen anytime this year. Probably be next year. But the fact that they're even making this fight is just, to me, it's an absolute disgrace. The way that Brock Lesnar entered, it was just so WWE-esque. And the people that I was watching the pay-per-view with, they were pretty much disgusted with Lesnar. You know, the fact that Stipe wasn't even given an interview after that fight. You know, I mean, they pushed him off the side for Lesnar for this sideshow. And, you know, Lesnar's cursing, and it's just stupid. Come on. I mean, this is what the UFC's reduced to now. They've always done stuff like this, but now it seems like they're depending on Lesnar, and they're depending on, you know, the stars of the past to try to increase pay-per-view buys and to try to get more eyeballs on their product. And it just seems real cheap, real tawdry. The idea of Brock Lesnar, you know, coming and fighting Daniel Cormier, I'm not even interested in the fight. I got to tell you, I'm just not. You know, because it's not a legitimate heavyweight match. Lesnar has no business fighting for a title. If it was a real sport, you wouldn't have stuff like this. You'd have a ranking system. You've had maybe Stipe get a rematch, but you don't have that because it's not a real sport. It's become a spectacle. It's become entertainment, and that's what it is. And you know, I hope it backfires on them. It probably won't, though. I'm sure Lesnar will make it to the fight, and then he'll fight, and Daniel will win. But and look, even if he does test positive, I mean, look, you know, when Lesnar fought Mark Hunt, he tested positive twice before that fight, and they still let him fight. So what does that say? What does that say about USADA? What does that say about drug enforcement? It's virtually non-existent. I mean, you know, you have Daniel Cormier coming out and saying that he wants to fight Brock Lesnar only when Brock Lesnar is clean, but the UFC is not going to make sure that Brock Lesnar is clean. USADA, they could care less about whether or not Brock Lesnar's clean. They just want this fight to go through because it's the only fight, really, that they can make. I mean, you know, who knows what Daniel's going to do at 205. He's talking about fighting Shogun, talking about fighting Gustafson. You know, who knows? John Jones is a burnout. He's going to be out for a while. So there's really, really not a lot they could do. So this is what they have now. They have Lesnar coming back into the UFC. It's really pathetic, folks. It really is. Big thanks to Curran Jacobs for sharing our video. Appreciate that. And what else we got going on in the world of mixed martial arts? I don't know if there was an event this weekend or not. You had the Dana White Tuesday Night Fighter. You've got this Brendan Schaub versus Dana White thing. Brendan Schaub is feuding with Dana White. It's just funny. It's really, everybody's talking about it too now. Now all the so-called MMA media podcasts and sites, and everybody's just, you know, latching on to this and talking about it. It's really the hot topic now. You know, and you know, I don't really care what these guys have to say. You know, to me, you know, a guy like Brendan Schaub, he is what the UFC and what essentially the MMA fanboys out there want to see. You know, they want to see a former fighter out there who's tied in with Rogan and these other guys, you know, fight. He's marketable. He's a hip guy. And so, you know, all of a sudden his opinion becomes valid, becomes important when he says, you know, he has a platform and he becomes an authority on the sport of MMA. And, you know, certainly former fighters can podcast. They can do a lot of different things. But, you know, to me, these guys are not interested in really covering the sport. They're more or less interested in, you know, former fighters and staying relevant and keeping their name in the headlines and you know, searching for clickbait. And I can understand that to a certain extent, but, you know, I don't know how. I mean, I certainly don't listen to these guys. I certainly don't take them seriously, really, with anything. And so he made a comment about this, or about kickboxers coming over to MMA and not being able to knock everybody out. And this Israel Adesanya, who, by the way, Israel Adesanya is really, really a very talented, spectacular fighter who I hope doesn't go the way of John Jones and becomes a burnout. I hope that I didn't get a chance to really investigate him to see what type of person he is, if he's involved with drugs or some of this other stuff that a John Jones is involved with. But hopefully he's on the straight and narrow and he could continue to impress, because if you win and you're flamboyant, and especially if you're undefeated, you know, like he is, then you'll eventually become a draw. So, you know, Israel Adesanya took offense to Brendan Schaub and, you know, started making fun of Schaub or something to that effect. Dana White got involved and was criticizing Schaub for being a mediocre fighter in the UFC, saying he doesn't know what he's talking about. You shouldn't listen to this, we'd call him a clown or whatever. And then Brendan Schaub responded by implying that Dana White, or actually White said that Rogan is carrying Schaub, and you know, if it wasn't for Rogan, you know, Schaub would be nowhere. And then once Rogan stops carrying him, he'll just fade away into oblivion. And then Brendan Schaub replies by implying that Dana White slept with Ronda Rousey. Now this wouldn't be surprising at all. I'm sure Dana White has slept with a lot of female fighters out there. That's the way it works. That's the politics and just the sleaziness within MMA and within corporate America anywhere. I mean, it exists everywhere. I'm telling you, in my job, I see people, you know, my bosses and people that are higher in the company than I am throwing themselves at other people and just, you know, trying to screw anything that moves, you know? And there's no such thing anymore as personal integrity. I remember, you know, a while back, we were going to have June White on this program. And June White was saying, you know, Dana White is hooking up with ring card girls. And it's just, you know, would this be surprising? No, I don't think anybody would be surprised if Dana White was sleeping with Ronda Rousey or any one of these other fighters' wives or female fighters or whatever. I'd be surprised if he wasn't. That's just how corrupt it is in Las Vegas out there, you know. So this is nothing new. And, you know, Schaub is trying to present himself as some sort of martyr here where he's sticking up for fighters. The only reason why he's coming out and insulting Dana White is because it's convenient for him. That's it. You know, if he was still under the UFC employee, he would be, you know, in their good graces. He would never be insulting Dana White. And you know, he talked about Dana White and the powers that he has and how, you know, he controls people's destinies. And I've been saying that for a long time. I mean, that's definitely been the case with the MMA media. They're always in one shape or form subservient to Dana White. And that's wrong. I mean, that's just, you know, it's power. That's what exists in this country, you know, where, you know, the politics and people in power, for whatever arbitrary reason, you know, want to ban other people and want to, you know, screw with other people. And it's unfortunate because we don't live in a collective society. We live in an individualistic society where these type of abuses could happen, and they do happen, you know, quite often. So, you know, he's right about that, but I just, you know, he's trying to present himself as a champion for fighters' rights and a champion for, you know, for what's right and all that stuff. And it's all self-serving. It's all trying to keep this Dana White feud alive and, you know, get more clicks or ratings for his podcast, which I understand, but it should be taken as such. People should really understand, I think, what's happening here and what's going on. So, you know, we'll see if this continues. I think supposedly, I don't know if he's writing a tell-all book. Somebody's writing a tell-all book. And I'm surprised that these accusations haven't come out against Dana more frequently. You know, I'm surprised that there hasn't been any female fighters out there or females within the sport that have come out and said, yeah, well, you know, Dana White did this and Dana White has done that. You know, it hasn't happened, but it doesn't mean it's not out there. I mean, it took years for women to come out and accuse Donald Trump of doing stuff and Harvey Weinstein and fill in the blank. And so it's a very corrupt sport. It's a corrupt culture that we live in. And, you know, what's right is wrong, and what's wrong is right. Everything is upside down. Okay? There's just no question about that. And so, you know, Dana White is the chief scumbag there. There's just no question about that. I mean, how many times has he lied? How many times has he insulted people? It's just, yeah, the guy's just miserable, vindictive, petty. Fill in the blank, you know? And yeah, he's got $400 million. That's what that behavior gets you at. Millions and millions of dollars. That's why guys like myself and Eddie Goldman will be broke. We broke the rest of our lives because integrity first, ladies and gentlemen. You have personal integrity first, and it's impossible to get anywhere in this godforsaken society. It really is. All right, we got about 8 minutes left here on Carson's Corner. I want to encourage everybody to go to my YouTube page, youtube.com/Carson's Corner, or I'm sorry, /Bob Carson MMA, and make sure to watch the matches that I posted of Curran Jacobs. It took me a while to post these matches because I don't have a stable internet connection. I have a hotspot pass that I get weekly, and a lot of times it's inconsistent, so it took me like, you know, God, 2 or 3 days to upload like a few of the matches. And finally, I got them all up there. So they're all up there to see. The video that I used is from my phone. The camera that I used is from my phone. I tried to borrow a camera from my sister, and I couldn't get it to work, and it was just a disaster. So at the last minute, I had to make a decision. Let me use my phone. And that's exactly what I did. I made the right decision. You know, sometimes it's a little bit shaky, and sometimes you can see my fat thumb in the view. But nonetheless, it you could still make out the matches and still feel the excitement that I felt at the 2018 Frank Gotch Catch Wrestling World Championship at the Primal Gym there in Hamilton, New Jersey. Yeah, make sure to go on Facebook and like the videos and spread them around. You know, make sure to do that. Now, Snake Pit USA is supposedly putting out these matches that they're putting out the whole event. I don't know what's happening with that. I don't know. That's what Curran has said. Curran has said that they're going to be posting the matches, but you know, we'll see if that happens. I don't know. I mean, they had their photographer up there very close, so he should have got a much better view of the action than I did. But we'll see. We'll see if that comes to fruition, ladies and gentlemen. What else have we got here? We've got about 6 minutes here. Wow. Chris Lieben is doing bare-knuckle boxing now. This is really pathetic. I'm sorry. People are going to bare-knuckle boxing, these you know, retired and former MMA fighters. And I guess there's money to be made. But now you've got Chris Lieben fighting Baroni, Phil Baroni. My God. I don't know if I want to see this. You know, I don't know what these guys, they must be doing for a paycheck. You know, I know Chris Lieben was trying to do, I think he was trying to work as a real estate agent before, and I don't know if he's still doing that, but this is just, it's unfortunate. I don't know what organization this is for. I don't know if it's for Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship, which we had that event. We covered that event, or we didn't, we called into the press conference, and that was about it. But, you know, it's almost depressing seeing these fighters who are, you know, in their 40s. I don't know, Lieben is probably not, Lieben has got to be around my age, but Baroni is in his 40s. There's no question about that. And he talks about, you know, he's a fighter and he's always going to fight. Okay, but, you know, father time, you know, tells you when you're a fighter and not. You know, I mean, you can't be a fighter your entire life. And what we're going to see now is we're going to see these fighters fight into their 50s. You know why? I mean, look at a guy like Ken Shamrock, or Hoist Gracie, you know, fought 49 years old. Look at Chuck Liddell now coming back at 48 years old, 49 years old. That's a reflection of the economy. That's all it is. It's a reflection of a lack of income that these guys have, and they need to make money. That's it. It's unfortunate. I mean, that's why you see older Americans in the workforce anyway. There are more senior citizens now working than, you know, 17-year-olds, 18-year-olds, because you're a slave to the ground. You have to work for survival. Money equals survival. You have to. The more money you have, the better your survival is. And so that's what's happening now. It's really sad. It really is. It really is pathetic. And meanwhile, we got guys like Dana White that have $400 million. Does this make sense? It doesn't make any sense, folks. Okay? These MMA fighters are killing themselves. They're starving. You've got someone like Max Holloway who's practically having a stroke on television. You know, looking terrible. He's 26 years old. They're talking about him retiring. You know, it's really, really unfortunate. You know, what's going to happen to a guy like Frankie Edgar another 5-10 years? It's, I shudder to think. I mean, you've got the weight cutting, which is so detrimental to fighters. You've got the fights in itself. You've got a lack of job security. You're basically an independent contractor in there, and you lose a couple fights. You're no longer valuable to the organization, and they take you out to pasture, you know? What do you think? You know, you could jump ship and go to Bellator? No, it's not going to be that easy in Bellator. Bellator will probably pay you less. And, yeah, you've got guys like Lyoto Machida that went to Bellator, supposedly signed a seven-figure contract, but he's rare. You know, not every fighter is going to get to that level and have that ability to make that money from Bellator. And who knows where Bellator is going to be? It's one of the things that I wanted to ask Scott Coker about today is, you know, are you happy with the direction of Bellator? The lack of ratings, no type of pay-per-view presence there. You know, some high-profile signings, definitely. But what does Bellator's future entail? I mean, how are they really, really you know, going to make a lot of money out there? You know, I don't know. But Bellator is not the alternative to the UFC, in my opinion, in terms of fighter welfare out there and opportunity. They're just not. But this is what we have, ladies and gentlemen. It's 2018, and things are just getting worse. They really are. All right. Well, that's it. Well, this hour really flew by very, very quickly. I want to thank you out there for listening. Please make sure to friend me on Facebook. Just type in Bob Carson on Facebook, or you could type in my URL at facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. You could follow me on Twitter, twitter.com, same handle, Bob Carson MMA. And make sure to follow me here on Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/Carson's Corner. And lastly, on YouTube, youtube.com, Bob Carson MMA. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect.